Mr. Hewlett, Reel 6. Now, we've been having a look at the battalion war diary, and we think that probably you left a bit after Germano. But as far as you remember, you rejoined in early October, and Laurie Stringer was by then your new company commander.
That's right. And I think we must still have been in somewhere in or around San Marino, although I had missed the sort of celebrations of San Marino.
Now, what were your first impressions of Laurie Stringer, who was to be your who was the major by then of B Company?
He seemed a very nice guy. I don't particularly. I think he was a conventional officer, probably fearless and a stickler for, you know, washing and shaving whenever he could, rather than growing a beard and that sort of thing, always being smart and ready, even on action days, shaving. I can remember him sort of propping a little bit of glass up against a stone and shaving without fail, I think.
So the next thing we're really up to is around about the you moved back into the line on the 9th, and then on the 10th, you were moving towards La Croqueta and Balignano Spur.
That's right.
Now, could you take me through, I mean, the 10th was the day you were wounded, we know that. Could you take us through in as much detail as possible what happened to you that day? From when you woke up, basically. Everything you remember.
I haven't got clear memories, I must say that right away, but I can distinctly remember being in a house which we were using as an observation post with Russell Collins, and we were looking ahead up this hill, which I subsequently know as the Balignano Ridge. And in fact, I think at one time we were watching Germans who might well have been laying mines on this track.
Now, this is that's the sunken road that everybody talks about.
That
sort of halves the hill and goes straight up.
At that time, we didn't realise that we would be attacking up that hill more or less as dusk was falling.
So this is you joined. Russell Collins had done a patrol with his platoon up to La Croqueta, and then you joined him there, and that was when you were in this house, presumably looking
up
the hill.
That's right.
And
it was later on that we got the...
Now, before we go, it also mentions that a patrol was sent out from B Company up to Balignano. Now, you recall this, but recall it, there's been a bit of a disaster.
Well, I seem to remember that they didn't come back. I may be wrong there, but it was a patrol, a fairly large one. I think it might well have been 8 men. Under a Lance Sergeant, which was either Lance Sergeant Pidcock or Lance Sergeant Shepherd, I forget which. I think... I didn't have any dealings in sending them out. I think it must have been Stringer who sent them out. But I seem to remember that if anybody came back, it was to report that the others had been captured or decimated in some way. Although, because of what happened to me later, I never really established the truth of that.
No.
But it did seem to indicate that there was some fairly considerable opposition there, obviously.
Now, what about, you were ordered to attack, I think, around about 7 o'clock, that night.
Yes, about half past
five. Do you recall the O group at all, that I presume, Laurie Stringer would have had it, or would it have been Colonel Worrell?
I think it was Laurie Stringer, because I remember him saying that because I was due to go home to England, having been out much abroad much longer than anybody else out there, they were going to either try and keep my head down for the last weeks or so, and that I would be reserve platoon on the attack, and that later they would try and see if I could be assistant transport officer to Morris Richardson or something to keep me out of the line of fire. That was said to me. But of course, it didn't work out because when the attack started, do you want me to tell us that?
Well, yes. That's did Laurie give detailed orders of what was to be done?
Well, no. I can't, if he did, I don't know if I can remember them. But we had to attack this hill, which we thought was held by Germans, but not in any great strength.
Now, with you, you were going to have Collins, Russell Collins, Lieutenant Collins, who was on the right. Now, Collins objected to his platoon being put into action again after having done the morning patrol. Do you recall that at all, or did he do it privately?
I certainly don't remember that.
Now, I think the attack was due to start at 7, according to various accounts. But dusk, or whatever, half 5, 7, doesn't make a lot of difference. What do you remember of the actual attack then?
Well, I remember going up the hill, walking up the track with some trepidation, because Russell Collins and I had seen them, we thought, laying mines in this very track that we were walking up, which was not all that nice. I was not leading, as I said, I was reserve platoon, therefore I was towards the rear, or in the middle of the thing, with Laurie Stringer.
So Laurie Stringer came forward with you from the start line?
Yeah. He was. And the first thing that happened was there was a lot of firing ahead, and it was reported back that Stan Waymark had been killed for the very first action. And there was a machine gun firing, which started firing towards us.
From which?
On the right.
From the right.
Yeah. And so Laurie Stringer said, for God's sake, take your men and go and silence that machine gun. So we had to climb up out of the sunken road onto the hill. And I hope I'm not getting muddled here, but I had difficulty in keeping my men together to go up this hill, because there were vineyards on it with wires stretching out, and people's small pack got caught in the wires, therefore it was very difficult to keep men together, and one was concentrating, you know, trying to help them over the disentangle from the wires and get them in a state where they could be firing their weapons. And it was whilst doing that that I got hit.
Now, while you did that, Stan Waymark had been on the left. Now, according to some sources, Sergeant Redding was leading the right-hand platoon, or Reading. I think, I don't know whether that's correct.
I've forgotten something.
What was Sergeant Redding? I'll come back to when you were wounded. This is just a little gap now. What was Redding like? Do you recall him at all? Was he a competent NCO?
Yes, I think he was. Yes, I'm not sure. I've got a feeling he might have been a regular soldier.
And he was on the right. And it was from the right that the machine gun fire was coming.
Yes.
And where Russell Collins' platoon were
further
right. So they'd gone right round on a right hook. And
And I was trying to do more or less the same thing, because there didn't seem to be any way one could approach it absolutely direct. The only cover of any sort was on the right. And I was hopefully making small trees and bushes.
Was this the vines as well? Or do vines not provide much cover?
No, they don't. They don't provide much, because they're only about this high.
3 foot.
Yeah, not much more than that. But there were trees as well, a few trees, and it seemed to me the only way we'd ever get anywhere near this machine gun was by getting some sort of cover to get up the hill.
Now, what about other types of fire? Was a general small arms fire as well as this one identifiable machine gun?
I suppose there may well have been, like any infantry officer would tell you, that the most difficult thing in the world is to get your own men to fire back once they get fired on, because it's inclined to stultify people. The fact that somebody's firing at them, that I did it myself. You know, one's inclined to sort of freeze up, so you can't do anything. But the only thing to do is to fire. Doesn't even matter where you fire. I had a Tommy gun, and guess what? It didn't work. In fact, trying to make it work, I very nearly shot Laurie Stringer early on. Because Tommy guns are very sensitive to mud, and I believe I chucked it away. I'm not sure. I got my pistol out. But a Tommy gun's all right as long as the weather's good. But if it's not good,
what was the weather like that day?
I think it was raining then, but we had had an enormous amount of rain. I mean, most of the little action I had, I seemed to be soaked all the time.
Was it raining on Was it raining on Germano?
I think it was. Yes. We certainly had an awful lot of rain in Italy, but more than it usually has at that time of year.
Now, so you were moving up towards the right. What about mortar fire? Was there any mortar fire on you? Because Laurie Stringer seems to remember there was some mortar fire.
There was some mortar fire, but I didn't really get the worst of it until after I'd been wounded. Because they were still mortaring us after I was wounded when they found this shutter to put me on.
Now, when you were sent to the right, so you were going right and diagonally across, as far as I can see, imagine. Where did Laurie go at this? Laurie Stringer, I should be familiar, but Laurie, as far as I'm concerned,
he must have gone on, still on the track, as far as I knew. We're separated by what? Not more than 80 to 100 yards, I wouldn't have thought.
But your impression is he carried on forward to towards Waymark's platoon and Reading's platoon, Reading, I don't know.
Yeah, Reading.
Reading.
I mean, I didn't know that, but I assumed that.
Who would be with Stringer at that point? Would it be...
The headquarters people. Maybe stretcher bearers, company runners and things like that. I don't honestly know.
And who would you have with you? I mean, you'd have your platoon, but what about your runner?
Well, that was Appleby, my batman, really. He was with me.
What was Appleby like? Because he crops up in the story, I know.
Very quiet. Ginger, a freckled character. I think he'd been a butcher or something in civilian life. Very phlegmatic. Not an excitable chap. One of his longest speeches was, if you don't buy some socks soon, you won't have any bloody socks, because I'm not donning them anymore. And that was a long speech, rapidly.
What did he do for you? I know this is stepping in, but what was his role as an officer? I mean, what did he do for you?
Well, what does a batman do? He is a servant, really. It's just your personal servant and runner. You know, if you needed to get a message to somebody, you would send him. I don't remember sending him anywhere, but I presume must have done. But in general, he was there. I mean, he was meant to fight. He had a gun and fired things when he could.
What sort of terms were you on with him? I mean, was it first name, or was he Appleby to you, or what did you? Were you on first name terms at all? Or?
No, I think I called him Appleby. I know his surname was, his Christian name was Roger, but I don't think I called him Roger. I think I just called him Appleby.
There's one story that I want you to just drop in here about what he said at Germano. You hadn't mentioned that on tape. What about the trenches? It seems he was quite an experienced soldier, or at least in attitude.
Yes, well, of course, Appleby had been in action before, which is more than I had. And it was his experience that he said, if there are trenches there, they've been dug by Germans, don't use them, because they will have their artillery will be fixed. They'll be fixed on those trenches. So it's a bad place to be. And I appreciate that as a very sensible piece of advice. And I'm very glad I took it.
And that's about, when did he say that? That was about Germano?
That was before we got to Germano, at the time when Private Best was killed. I'm not clear.
So round about the first barn.
The second barn.
Second barn.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Okay, so now you were going up the hill, heading to the right. Your men were having trouble with two things. One, the vines getting caught up, and two, with the fire, and they were tending not to fire back. Were they going to ground, or were they staying with you? I mean,
We were running. We were all running, hopefully in the right direction. Perhaps slightly more to the right than they should have been, but anyway, going towards the first bit of cover one could see. And it was because they were getting tied up in these wires, I think, that slowed the progress down. But in general, there was a good deal of haste. You know, you didn't, because it was fairly open. I mean, that's how I got hit, because it was open.
Now, what happened when you actually got hit, as you remember it?
I remember it very clearly. It was like being hit. I said like a double-decker bus hitting you. The weight of a bullet is unbelievable when it hits you. And it's why when you watch things on television, you can't dodge bullets the way they do and shake them off like that. Because it hit solid bone.
Just above the knee.
Sort of sledgehammer, right through the knee joint.
Absolutely. The knee joint.
Yeah, that's right.
And did it knock you down then?
Yes, it did. And that was real agony, because my leg was, the bones were broken, and it was sort of hanging off at the wrong angle, and any movement was agony, as you can probably imagine. All I can remember saying was, don't leave us here. Or I don't know if I said leave me here or don't leave me here. It was one or the other. And it's a fairly important thing as to which it was. I think I said, don't leave me here. Dump me down in the sunken ditch. And I suppose that's what they did.
Who did?
Appleby must have been one of them, and whoever else was near me. But when we got to the ditch, somebody had taken some prisoners, and they were helping carry this door that we found, an old shutter. That's what they put now.
And
it was then that these mortar bombs started, and when Appleby was hit, as were the two other people carrying it.
So they were carrying you back down the sunken road, Appleby and
two German prisoners.
And there was no one else about.
I can't remember, but I don't remember it.
Did you see? Other people we've interviewed. Did you see at this stage? Did you know where either Lovell, Collins, or Stringer were? I mean, they're the three we've interviewed.
It was almost dark. It was just getting dark, and once I'd been dropped and everybody had disappeared, dark was approaching, and eventually I could hear Germans walking around looking for their own wounded, and I thought, oh my God, I'm going to be captured as well as wounded.
Now, so they were carrying down this mortar blast. Did it land close to then? Presumably,
I think it must have done.
And Appleby, was he when he was carrying you down? Was he wounded at that stage at all?
He was hit. I didn't know this at the time, but I take it he must have been hit with the mortar bomb that hit everybody who was carrying him.
But he wasn't wounded.
And they dropped that immediately.
He wasn't wounded before that.
No, not as far as I know.
So
I'm told he got something in the neck.
Who told you that? Or you don't remember?
It was long afterwards I was told that.
So
I think it's probably Lloyd Stringer.
You weren't hit at that time again.
I wasn't hit again.
You were dropped. Were you on the ground when you were hit, or did they drop you to the floor?
I think they dropped me. I'm not sure.
So. And what happened then? I mean, what happened to the Germans and Appleby, as far as you're concerned? Because they weren't there later on, were they?
Things eventually went quiet.
Had they gone?
It got pitch dark. There wasn't anybody. I was just completely alone.
So the Germans and Appleby, they'd gone.
Yeah.
Wounded or however they'd gone, you don't know.
There wasn't anybody there.
Did you any chance of you having fallen unconscious or something?
There is a possibility, but I don't. Because I was losing quite a lot of blood, as you can probably imagine. I might well have been unconscious. I don't know how long it was before Major Stringer and CSM Clark came up and got me back.
So, you don't remember Appleby leaving?
No, I don't.
So, so the next thing, you were lying there, and was the mortar fire still going on?
No. I thought, oh dear, everybody's gone, I've been left, and I'm going to end up a prisoner of war, or nobody will find me.
And you were lying, was it in the gutter of it, or in the middle of it?
In the ditch, to the side, to the right-hand side of this road.
Now, just to slightly go back, when you'd been hit, your men were going across. Sergeant Redding's men would have been going. Were they going straighter than your men were, ahead of you?
I didn't see them, so I don't know.
So they just weren't there. And what about Waymarks, when you didn't know what... Did you know what was happening to the troops in front of you?
I didn't know how far they'd gone.
Had they fallen back before the mortar bomb fell? And
It's almost impossible to say.
Right.
They might well have been... They might well have decided by that time that they were trying to attack too many Germans. I don't know.
Now, what happened then? So you were lying there, worried, and presumably in pain.
A mild heart belt, yes.
How did you, I mean, can you tell us a bit? I mean, how did you feel?
I thought, you know, what a way to end the war. You know, I really thought that because everybody had disappeared, and therefore I concluded it had been an unsuccessful attack, I could hear Germans walking around looking for their own wounded, and I thought, oh God, they're going to find me. I'm going to, whatever happens, I'm going to end up a prisoner of war. Unless I'd die from lack of blood first. That's the awful, depressing feeling I had. And it was in the middle of feelings like that that suddenly Stringer and Clark came.
So you don't remember anybody else finding you before that? From the time Appleby and the two Germans left you until Stringer arrived, as far as you're concerned, you don't remember anybody else finding you?
Nobody at all.
And as far as you know, you were conscious most, if not all, of the time?
I wouldn't swear to that, but I don't... I can't answer that. I don't know. If somebody would tell me how much the time was, I could probably...
Someone could have found you while you were unconscious, but that you certainly don't remember it, so as far
That's
as...
Right. Right. Sure.
So, now, how did Stringer find you? I mean, who was coming? Where was he coming from? Was he coming up the road or was he coming down?
Coming up the road. I suppose I might well have been unconscious, or more or less practically asleep when he came.
So he wasn't falling back from the attack? He'd come forward
no,
to look...
They'd already been back and he was coming back, coming up again.
Was he looking for you?
I presume so. I'd always thought so. Yes, he and CSM Clark, yes.
So what happened?
Well, they had difficulty in carrying me because I was in such agony with any movement of my leg. And I think it was then that they decided to tie my ankles together with my own boot laces, which was a very good idea because it kept the whole thing sort of more or less solid. I don't remember whether they still used this shutter that I was on or whether they carried me in some other way. The next thing, the only thing I remember then is getting to somewhere where the padre poured scalding hot tea all over me. As a blessing and a comfort.
So, I mean, Stringer says you were actually, you were still, but you said told him to leave you originally. I mean, do you recall that, or is that not how you remember it?
Well, yes, I can't remember why I said that. Shock, I suppose.
So you did say it?
I remember saying, yeah.
Leave me.
Leave me. Or don't leave me. I don't know whether it was leave me or don't leave me. I think it must have been leave me.
At this stage?
No, this was earlier on.
Stringer says you said leave me, you know, at that stage as well.
Well, I must be mad if I said that.
But you don't know.
I don't remember that.
So you were carried back, and then what happened? Where were you carried to? You think it might
have... Well, it must have been a regimental aid post. I think that's what it was called officially. I know from subsequent things that I was taken to 23rd Field Surgical Unit.
Now
where Doc Jones did the original operation
now
on my leg.
What was the first stage of treatment, though? You got back to the regimental aid post. Wouldn't that be where Doc Jones was?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know what he did there. I then went by ambulance.
What about the Meek business, Padre Meek?
That must have been at this place, Padre Meek.
How did he do it? What happened exactly?
Well, he gave me... He was letting me drink a cup of tea. I was lying on a... I think I was on, must have been on a stretcher by then. And with the best intentions in the world, he poured tea that was too hot, which I couldn't swallow, and which went all down the front, I think. And it was at that stage that I think I began to realise I was getting dysentery, which wasn't funny. Because I then had a long ambulance journey in front of me to Ancona. I went to Ancona, where I believe I had a blood transfusion.
Now, when did you have... So the first operation, when did you have that? That was...
Well, I seem to remember having somebody had written 23 FSU on the That was 23rd Field Surgical Unit. I don't know where they were. But anyway, I went by ambulance to Ancona, where I think I had a blood transfusion or something. I remember an Indian in the same ward. And then I remember being hoisted up the side of a hospital ship at Ancona. And I went down in the hospital ship from Ancona to Bari in southern Italy. And I was taken into 102 South African General Hospital at Bari.
Now, what state were you in during this journey? Because you've got
two... I was in a bad state because I had dysentery by the end. I was in a terrible state because... I suppose because I'd lost a lot of blood, the dysentery got the better of me. I was in plaster. At some stage I'd been plastered, but the medical orders had a hell of a time sort of hoisting me up and down as I was constantly...
Were you in pain from the leg, or did they give you the morphine or whatever work?
Can't remember now. I think it was not acute pain anyway. But the worst was the dysentery. And then when I got to 102 South African General Hospital, they redid the plaster. And I remember they had a tap on the side of the plaster. And they were putting whatever they do, some sort of disinfection into it and letting it release by tap. I was also having Emitin injections in my arm for the Emitin for the dysentery. And I lost a lot of weight because I must have been 12 stone when I was wounded, and I went down to about 7 stone something.
Were you worried about losing the leg? I mean, how bad was the wound? Have they told you what had happened?
The last operation I had was done by a Polish officer, Captain Skopinka. And he said, "You'll be all right. You won't be able to bend this leg ever again, but it'll be strong enough, you'll be able to play tennis and all sorts of things." And I said, I find it impossible to believe you, but I shall hang on to that hope. And of course, he's right. I met that man again in Brighton. Years later, he'd become a prisoner of war or something and came back with all the people to Brighton. Captain Skopinka.
Had you worried about losing it before then? Or, I mean, it must have...
No, once it had been put into plaster, I realised that we're going to save it.
So the knee joint had been smashed?
It was officially described as a fractured femur extending into joint. So that it must have been the very bottom end of the femur, you know, which is the one that gets down here, and the patella, which is the kneecap, had been shot into lots of little pieces. And the smooth surfaces which make it bend, which I think are called condyles, they also had been broken up. So the only thing that was happening once it had been set was that for quite a long time, bits were coming out. You know, they had to sort of take little bits of bone out, which was slightly painful and a nuisance for a long time. I was a long time in hospital because I was in this 102 South African General Hospital, and then over to the hospital at Naples or Cervinara. I think it was at Naples, and it was just they came round one day at Naples. In this very open plan hospital, and sort of shouted, "Anybody been over here more than 4 years could be on the hospital ship." And there was no answer except me. And I said, "I've been out 4.5 years." They said, "Right, you're on the hospital ship tomorrow." And I got on the, I forget the name of the ship now, the famous hospital ship,